Hi, I'm Rosie, and welcome to the podcast, What Does Your Family Look Like? Sharon gives us a snapshot of what life was like for her as a doctor during COVID. To say that it was hard is a gross understatement. She and so many other medical professionals were practicing in the dark, as so little was known about COVID. This led to speculations about the virus, which then led to massive distrust of the medical system, thus making her job that much more challenging. Let's listen in.
You want to talk about COVID and what that was like?
Yeah, we can talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
All right.
So that had to be, out of all of the years that you've practiced medicine, was that the absolute hardest?
It was hard because there was just so much, and still is really, so much unknown, mm-hmm. right? And that's really hard. Yeah, it was definitely a very interesting time to be in medicine, mm-hmm. And a lot of emergency medicine workers, so physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, techs, we were really on the front lines. Like, we were the people when, like, the primary care offices were closed or wouldn't see you if you had a runny nose. Like, mm-hmm. people were still coming to the ED. And, like, very initial, early weeks of COVID, the EDs in Baltimore were very empty, actually. Mm-hmm. Very empty. Mm-hmm. Like, empty. Like, we would have empty rooms all the time. It was mm-hmm. almost, like, eerie.
Like, you were the calm before the storm.
Almost. Mm-hmm. And then we... there was just so much unknown, and the landscape of it was just ever changing. Mm-hmm. You know, what you did for patients, how you treated them, did you intubate them, do you put them on high flow, what are the medicines you give, mm-hmm. and the science was just changing day to day,
right.
week to week, and that's scary,
so
especially because, you know, generally you go to work, and even though our jobs have some danger associated with them and some risk, you go to work and you don't think that it could potentially harm you mm-hmm. in an active way, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. On a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So it was really hard going in and not knowing what you could be exposed to, what could happen. I mean, I would, like, take my clothes off in the garage and put them immediately in the washing machine. I would shower, mm-hmm. wash my hair mm-hmm. before I would even, like, walk up the stairs in my house.
Wow.
Because we just didn't know.
Right.
And then vaccination came out and, you know, we were very, very lucky working where I work that we always had PPE available to us. We always had stuff available to us. And I always felt like my department was putting my safety first. So I never felt like they mm-hmm. were sending me into a room with, you know, inappropriate PPE. I mm-hmm. always felt like I had appropriate things available to me. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Vaccination happened and the hospital rollout was maybe not ideal. And people who weren't seeing patients were getting vaccinated before frontline people. Mm. And they had their best, like, it's tricky to know, right, when resource allocation at that time, especially there was such little vaccine
sure.
that came out initially. But we were all just clamoring for something that could make us feel a little bit safer.
Right.
And a little bit protected in that kind of ever-changing environment. And then COVID also got very, very hard when it got very political, mm-hmm. For me, mm-hmm. at least, you know, because we would on one hand have people who were like, I got all the vaccinations, I did everything right, who were very, very sick still, who got sick from people who probably weren't vaccinated,
right.
who weren't doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we took care of people who... we would tell them they had COVID and they would have very low oxygen levels, like critically ill. And they would say, I don't think I have COVID. I don't want to stay in the hospital. And they would leave against medical advice, literally to go home and die.
Oh my gosh.
One guy, I remember his daughter was the nurse and he was like, I'm leaving. And that, like, additional layer of, not just like I'm leaving because I can't stay here, I don't want to stay here, like that additional layer of mistrust mm-hmm. And like distrust of the healthcare system, mm-hmm. which was brought on in a large part by the political atmosphere
right.
at the time,
right,
just made things so much harder. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it wasn't just about taking care of patients at that time, it was also about kind of managing that distrust and managing people's perceptions of like treatment and testing of COVID. And that was really just so hard.
Yeah, I know.
And it just felt so gross. Like you felt like you couldn't win at all.
Yeah.
And that was when it was really hardest for me. That was in the, I think it was like during the Omicron wave or whatever they call it. It was like,
I remember that. That's what I got. I got Omicron.
Yeah. Yes.
And you got it early.
We had COVID early. Yeah. Yes. Very early. And luckily we were okay, but I actually went to the emergency department when I had COVID because I was very like tachycardic, and we saw so many people who got so sick.
Oh.
But, like, you get really nervous.
Of course you do.
When I was in that situation that I was going to be really sick, and yeah.
So what was it like wearing the mask and did you have the shield?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh. Yeah.
Do you still wear a shield?
In patients' rooms who have COVID, who test positive, I do, but not otherwise.
Okay.
No, we're down to wearing mainly surgical masks. And masks are actually optional right now at the hospital, but I still wear a mask because there's so much viral crud going around.
Right.
But I, for the most part, wore a PAPR, which was like one of the things that was like the belt and then the hood.
Oh.
And I like that better. It was more comfortable.
Okay.
And then, you know, everyone sort of found their favorite N95 mask. And I actually bought mine. So my hospital gave me some. And then they stopped supplying them at some point. They still have N95s, but they don't have my favorite. So I order some on Amazon. And I have my favorite.
You have your favorite. So you always, the mask you wear is always an N95?
Right now, I just wear a regular surgical mask.
Okay.
But I'll wear it in patients' rooms who test positive for COVID.
Right.
But we've gotten, we'll say, more loose over the years.
Yeah.
For good, you know, probably for good reason, I think. But those few years were very hard. A lot of nurses really, really, a lot of physicians too, really felt it. And a lot of people left the field.
I was going to say there was a big turnover.
Yeah. A lot of people left, and less so physicians, but a lot of mid-level, like PAs left, a lot of nursing left. Because it was just really, it was very hard again, like emotionally, physically, it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one person was like, it's basically like if you go to work and change your clothes like 50 times a day, because you always have to put on a gown, change your mask, clean off your shield. It was like there was always something you had to do.
Wow.
In between patient rooms or in a patient room. And we see so many people, again, who are short of breath, who are coughing, who have fevers, in the ED. And at some point, a lot of them had COVID.
Right.
But again, it was so hard to know that we wore that stuff in everyone's room until their testing came back. And
so I can imagine during the height of COVID and I know the whole political scene. And if you were like out and about and you saw people without masks, I can't even imagine how mad you got.
Yeah. Yeah. It was hard.
It was hard.
It was hard. It was definitely stressful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's COVID.
Yeah. Hopefully we never have to live through anything like that again. But we probably will. But who knows? Who knows?
In a million years, I never would have thought we'd live through a pandemic.
I know. It was really crazy.
I can't imagine. Your profession was like, what the?
And then like on top of all of that, you know, I have 2 school-age children who are at home.
Right.
Learning online.
Right.
And I mean, I look back on that time and I'm like, I have no idea
how
we made it through that.
I know. I remember.
I mean, our children grew up really fast because we were, you know, my husband and I both worked out of the home and we were like, see you later. And then on top of everything else, we also had to reinvent med school. To have med school be online. So that was the other thing that I was doing.
So you were helping out with that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, with my job, I do have flexibility. So there are a lot of times that I was home and then I was working from home. But it was just...
But I mean, you're an ED doctor.
It was a lot of juggling, a lot of balance of things. And, you know, doing what I do and what my husband does infection prevention. And it was a very, like, our neighbors were really our solace, and we would sit outside and we would have stuff.
That's
and it was
true.
Really funny, actually. We were reflecting. So my husband and I got COVID in October of that first year, And I actually got it from him, who he probably got it from somewhere at his work. And we, just before Josh had tested positive, we'd had like a little outdoor neighbor party because we were really like the only people we were all seeing were each other.
Yeah, we were just each other outside with masks. Right. We were 6 feet apart and we got it. We got each other through all of it.
100%. Really. But Sarah said the health department would call you. So if you were around someone at that time that tested positive for COVID, like the health department would call you on the phone and make sure you isolated.
Right.
And I guess the people on the phone said to her, and she just reminded me of this. They were like, so you had a block party. And she was like, no, no, it wasn't a block party. And I remember she's like, we felt so guilty and so bad about it. But, it was the only thing we could do to get by. And I don't think anyone else in the neighborhood actually got COVID from us.
We were really careful.
Yeah.
All of us were so careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember there were some kids that were born during that time.
Yeah.
And of course, to keep them away from other people, they got held all the time.
All the time.
And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, we're never going to learn how to walk.
I know. Right? I know. I know. Oh. I can think of one in particular, but he knows how to walk now.
He knows how to walk now. And I remember he's so cute. And when he was a baby, and it's like you just wanted to go up to him and go like, oh, you're so cute, and you couldn't.
I know. So, you feel like we felt a little bit like an island outside of our neighbor group. But even still, like within our neighbor group, no one was like, we'll take your kids in, right? And I get
it.
Because that was just the world we were living in. And our in-laws, who are generally very helpful to us, didn't want to see us at all.
Right.
It was a very interesting, we were still had similar work expectations and similar things that we had to do. And then on top of that, with our kids at home and having really minimal support for people who could like help care for our kids and help do that stuff, it was really very crazy. Like, it was crazy.
I know.
The fact that we all made it through a bit unscathed is incredible.
I remember you and another couple, I think, thought that, oh, we can hire somebody to help us out. Well, that didn't last long because then if you got COVID, she couldn't come help. If she got COVID, she couldn't come help.
Yeah.
So that kind of blew up pretty quickly, didn't it?
It did.
So it was like, how old were your kids then during COVID?
Meredith was in second grade. So she was in first when it started and then mainly second grade. So she was 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Rebecca was 10.
It was like, okay, kids, go teach yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're on your own.
Yeah, it was very much like that. My younger one had a wonderful teacher who was great and I think more important in second grade. And Rebecca had fine teachers and we made it through.
Yeah, you made it through.
We made it through.
You made it through.
It's like I love my Peloton instructors and one of them says, you've lived through 100% of your worst days. So
that's true.
It's true, right?
That's really true. Yeah, you're right. That's a good way to look at it. Would you want either one of your kids to go into the medical profession?
No. With a few caveats, I think that the medical field has changed a lot over the years. I'm not an expert on this, but like medicine in the United States is like fully broken. And again, not an expert. Like I'm not a policymaker. I'm not an insurance company expert. But the way that we care for patients, the way that we bill patients, the way that our industry is set up is a disaster. And it's a disaster for patients too, which is why we see so much like emergency department and hospital overcrowding. And because people, like I said, you should call your doctor if you're having something, but many people call their doctor. They don't have an appointment. They can't get in. They don't have the right insurance to see a specialist. Right. And this is why our system is broken and healthcare for whatever reason is not a universal right in this country, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
That everyone who lives here in this wonderful United States can have health insurance.
Right.
And again, I don't want to like get into political rhetoric or whatnot. I understand it's complicated, but I think that healthcare is really messy.
It should be a basic right.
It should be. It should be a right for everyone to be able to see physicians.
Absolutely.
And I understand that universal healthcare comes with complications also and is not a perfect system to have nationalized healthcare. But being someone who sees people who truly have no other resources, I just find it astonishing
it's
that
appalling.
Our government can't figure that out.
I agree.
And that insurance companies and all these conglomerates have so much who have so much money, have so much power over the situation. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that insulin costs so much money, mm-hmm. that people who need it can't afford it. And all of it is just really, it's sad. Like, it's sad for our country. It's sad for patients. It's mm-hmm. sad for doctors. Like, a lot of people are just frustrated and burnt out and tired. And, you know, the healthcare industry puts it back on individuals. You should do yoga. You should do this. And mm-hmm. really, like, that's not the answer, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. that's not going to solve the issue.
Right.
We need to fix the system.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. This guy.
Maybe you should go into policy.
No, I know. That would frustrate the all. Okay. But like, we need to figure out a way to fix it. Yeah. Someone needs to figure out a way to fix it, and it's probably not going to happen, and it surely won't happen probably in my kid's lifetime. Mm-hmm. Although I wish that it would.
Right.
But I would not encourage them to go into medicine. I think if it truly was one of their callings and they like felt passionate about it, I would support them.
Right.
But I'm not. I feel like years ago, you know, they would be like, you should be a doctor. You should be a doctor.
Right.
And now I feel like
Did you get that from anybody?
No, not necessarily. I didn't necessarily get that from anyone. Neither of my parents are doctors. So, no, I didn't get that from anyone. But, I mean, I think that amongst my kids, I don't see either of them wanting to pursue medicine in the sense of being a physician.
Right.
I could see them being maybe allied health professionals. Mm-hmm. I think my one daughter would be an amazing therapist. Mm-hmm. She's a real good listener.
That's great.
Lots of empathy, which I think is great.
That's great.
I think we need more people to take care of people's mental health. So I think that
Absolutely.
Would be amazing.
Absolutely.
And my other daughter may want to be a doctor to animals.
Right.
So may want to be a vet, which also has its struggles, I think. But
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. So I would support them whatever they think will bring them joy and make them happy. But I am not encouraging medicine.
Okay. What advice would you give your younger self?
Ooh, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Are we talking like younger self, like teenage self?
It doesn't matter.
I would say, you know, I think that growing up in life, you're always full of like insecurity and wondering, you know, that whole imposter syndrome mm-hmm. stuff. So I would say like, believe in yourself. Like my mom makes fun of me. She doesn't make fun of me, but she's like, the fact that you ran a marathon is hysterical to me. Cause mm-hmm. like you used to be like, oh my God, I have to run a mile. And
right,
I didn't do it because I wasn't confident in myself.
Right.
Not that I couldn't run a mile,
of
right?
Course,
I could
right.
put one foot in front of the other.
Right.
But I was always comparing myself to the other people who could run a faster mile,
right.
who were, you know, could do that. So I would say just sort like, I think it's okay to like take risks, to put yourself out there, mm-hmm. to try things that are hard, to mm-hmm. do things that are hard.
Mm-hmm.
And back then I didn't realize that. Like mm-hmm. I shied away from stuff like that. And
mm-hmm.
now I'm like, I could do things that are hard.
That's
you
great.
Know?
Like, I love that. I love that.
I don't know.
That's great.
And I think that I try and put that into my kids.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good place to end. Thank
there you,
you so much for doing this. I appreciate that.
I am so happy to be here.
I appreciate this.
Thank you for having me. This is
so
fun.
Welcome. It's so fun.
How often do you get to talk about yourself for an hour?
I love it. I love it. All right.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. I want to shout out a big thank you to Sharon for sharing her story about being an emergency department doctor. It's certainly not for the faint of heart. My takeaway is that she's a darn good decision maker. You'd have to be a good doctor, right? Let's not underestimate the difficulties involved in making a decision about someone else's health. Someone you have no history with, who walks in off the street or is transported to your ED by ambulance. If you're the type who gets mired down when faced with hard decisions, or you defer to someone else, then being a doctor is not for you. Of course, as a doctor, you consult with others, but the buck stops with you, and that can be overwhelming. I admire her dedication to the field, to her patients, and to her family. I'm so lucky she's my neighbor. Stay tuned for our upcoming episodes with my friend Tanya. Tanya is a licensed psychologist holding a PhD in clinical psychology. We discuss several relatable topics, some of which are why people worry, interpersonal relationships, and other matters pertinent to our daily lives. I think you'll really love her style. Thank you so much for listening. This is Rosie signing off. Talk to you soon. Please like and subscribe and follow us on all social media at WDYFLL, the podcast.